Hey everyone, welcome to the Transplant Strong podcast, also known as Danny Chats. It's been a while since I've done an episode, but I'm really excited about this one. I'm joined by Victoria. She's from, I think, New Mexico in America. And she also is a Wilson's disease patient who recently had a transplant 11 months ago. So we're going to sort of delve into her story and find out a bit about her. Hi, Victoria, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Thank you. Very good. Another Wilson's disease patient. And, you know, we had a little chat before and you sort of said this, you hadn't really met many Wilson's disease patients or spoke to many, you know, when you got your diagnosis and stuff.
Right. So I was diagnosed really young. I was diagnosed when I was 5 years old. And so I really didn't even understand what it was, what it meant, I guess, to, you know, live with this disease and live with illness. I was diagnosed because my aunt, who was 20 at the time, received a liver transplant, and they didn't know why her liver had failed. They did a biopsy of her liver and it was actually green from the copper.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they, at the time that she was diagnosed, which was 20 years ago, it was even more rare than it is now. And so it took them a while to kind of figure out what had caused her liver to fail. And after that happened, after they discovered it was Wilson's disease, everybody in our family was tested, and we have a pretty big family, and I was the only one that also had a positive result.
Yeah. So you were tested very young because of your aunt. So did that stop you from developing any of the sort of big symptoms of Wilson's disease? Was you put on medication early?
Yeah, so I was put on medication immediately. Like I started treatment immediately for it. And I tried a few different things. I think at the time, the only medication that was available was Cyprin or Trientine, which was the one that had to be refrigerated.
Yeah.
And so I was put on that, but I always had symptoms from the medication. I don't know if it was from the Wilson's disease or from the medication, but always had stomach pain, always was really nauseous. I had to always miss school. I couldn't play sports, like kind of just, you know, little things that you don't really think about. But as a kid, you know, I feel like I missed out on a lot because I was just always feeling sort of unwell. And then eventually a medication, zinc, came out, and that was supposed to be a little bit better for the body. And when that came out, I was, I think, 14 or 15. And at first, that was a really good treatment for me. And I felt normal. I felt like pretty good on it. I think I was overprescribed it because I was a young patient, and they would tell me, you know, we are not used to seeing patients as young as you diagnosed this soon, and so we don't really know how to dose you. And so for years I was being overprescribed it, and I would feel it, I'd get nauseous, I'd throw it up. I always just felt really unwell when I took it, and it reached a point where I would tell my doctors, if I took it for like 3 years, I was 16, and I would tell my doctors, I don't feel well. I think I'm taking too much of it. I feel like we need to adjust the dose. And my doctors would say, you know, you're going to have to take more. Like your liver is working extra hard. Like they wouldn't listen to me, I guess.
Yeah.
So it reached a point where I ended up in the hospital and I was overprescribed. I ended up having zinc poisoning. And that really affected me.
That's the importance, because people nowadays talk a lot about patient advocacy, and, you know, doctors do need to listen to their patients because, okay, you know, they know through books what's going on, but when you can feel it in your body, it's a lot easier to tell them, isn't it?
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think it helped that I was young and I'm a girl, and I was like, I didn't really know how to advocate for myself. And so these doctors would kind of be like, you know, you're fine, you know, you're healthy, you're young, there's no reason why you shouldn't feel good. And so it was always a battle.
Yeah. So you said you found out when you were five. Was that really confusing as well for you at the time? Because obviously, you know, you'd had 5 years where you had no medication, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're not really feeling too ill, and then someone's like, you've got to take this medication.
Yeah, it was really, I guess, just confusing. Like my family did a really good job at making me feel normal. They really didn't want me to be treated differently, which, you know, people treat you differently when they hear that you have an illness, especially a liver disease. And so I think for the most part, I didn't even, like I told you, I didn't really know how sick I was because my family treated me like it.
Yeah.
All I knew was that I didn't feel good and that I, you know, my stomach hurt every day and I couldn't do things like normal kids could do. And I didn't really ever question it. It was kind of just like, okay, this is my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. But I honestly didn't really notice that big of a difference until like I got older. And like, even like when I got to high school, that's when I kind of realized like, you know, it's not normal to be in pain every day. It's not normal to feel sick every day. It's not like I looked at everyone else around me. I'm like, they're getting to do whatever they want, eat whatever they want, live however they want. And I'm not. So,
would you live in like a strict copper diet then as well at the time?
Yeah. So when I was 5 years old, I was told I had to follow a strict low copper diet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think you're familiar, like no, like low chocolate, no meat, certain like meats, tomatoes, certain veggies, like just kind of random stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I really
all
like
all the nice stuff. Yeah, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the chocolate, right? So yeah. It was definitely hard for me because I couldn't eat what I wanted. And then I don't know if you ever took Triantine or Cyprine, but as a kid, it's such a strict schedule. You have to take it like 1 hour before or 2 hours after you eat. You can't have dairy with it. There were a lot of rules that came along with the medication. And I remember there were times I was so hungry, starving, but I couldn't eat because I had to take my medication in a few hours. And it was just like, I didn't understand that part of it. Like I was always like, everyone else can eat whenever they want. Everyone else can like, you know, not restricted. They can eat chocolate.
Yeah.
And so that was, for me, I think the hardest and the most noticeable difference for me was the diet because I was so restricted my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was very lucky in that sense. I was on penicillamine. I was also on zinc at the same time, but I told them the same as you. I said, the zinc's not reacting well with me. I don't like it. And it's just making me ill or making me sick. And luckily they took me off of it. But I was on the penicillamine as well, which was obviously doing the job of what the zinc was helping do, so I was lucky there. And then after that, my diet wasn't really restricted. I think for the first 2 years after my diagnosis, you know, my parents were quite strict with what I ate. But then after that, you know, I ate pretty much what I liked. And when I had my liver transplant, they did a biopsy and they said that the copper levels were still very good, like they were very low. But I developed like a blood clot and there was very bad scarring from when I was younger. So
yeah.
that's why I had my transplant.
You were on both penicillamine and the other medication is at the same time?
And zinc, yeah, for a short period, yeah. But yeah, then I come off the zinc.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's good that your doctors would listen to you. I mean, later on, I found a really good doctor that like he's supposed to be the expert for Wilson's disease here in the United States. He's like the leading researcher, which I participated in research through him. But before then, the doctors in my home state, New Mexico, was just very limited resources here. So
yeah, because I don't suppose they had seen many patients at all. And like you say, not especially children, but not even many adults with Wilson's disease.
Exactly. Yeah, and at least when I was coming up, there was one doctor, one single liver doctor here in the whole state, whole entire state. And so I saw them and then they ended up leaving. And so I had to see gastro doctors from that point forward and they definitely did not know how to treat the disease. So,
you know, you were taking your medication, you didn't respond well to the zinc. Where did that lead you to?
Yeah, so I took the zinc for a few years and it always made me sick. I always complained about it, you know? And so my parents saw that obviously. And they, like I said, they sought help from the leading experts. And so the leading experts here are in Connecticut on the East Coast, which is far from where I live now.
Yeah.
And so my parents moved out there and I went to school out here and I had scholarships to college and everything. And so I would commute. I would like during breaks, I would go see the doctors out there. And we kind of came up with a better plan for the zinc for me to take it kind of loosely, like not on such a strict schedule, but it didn't matter. Like I still told you, I was overdosed on it for years.
Yeah.
And so my body kind of ended up, it just kind of freaked out. Everything was off. All of my other levels, I was copper deficient, which was kind of crazy and unheard of for Wilson's disease, as you
Yeah.
know. Yeah, so it was just, everything was sort of just thrown off. And my body, when this happened, I was 16. And so almost 10 years ago, and my body's never been the same since, you know, it kind of just, since that point forward, I couldn't take any medications. Like, it didn't matter zinc or not, like my body just kind of rejected everything. And all of the food I would eat, like my body, I was already restricted with my diet before. And then after that, everything made me sick. Like, it was just so different. And I still kind of think my body is not ever fully recovered from that. It's a lot better now, but after that point, everything sort of took a turn.
Were they not doing regular blood tests on you, like every 6 months, every year, to find out that maybe you were deficient rather than, you know, were they not checking the levels?
Yeah, so they were. They were doing the levels. I did like the 24-hour urine catches every, I think it was every 3 months. So I was doing I was doing it pretty often, yeah. And they were coming back abnormal. And not only that, not only was I doing those tests, Danny, but I was also going into the emergency room often because, or urgent care, because I was feeling really sick all the time. And I knew something was wrong, but I would go in and the test would come back abnormal. And they would just be like, well, obviously your tests are abnormal because you have a liver disease. And like, that's it. It's nothing else. And I would express, I think it's the medication. And they would kind of just be like, no, like you need this medication to live. And even after I was overprescribed it and overdosed, the doctor called and said, like, you still have to take it. You have to get back on it. Like, you're going to die if you don't take it. And so, and I ended up not getting back on it for a few years because I was like, you know, my body needs to not be on this. I honestly kind of feel like I was one of those patients that kind of fell through the cracks and I didn't have the right team of doctors.
Yeah, it's another reason why that it's good to make these podcasts in the hope that if, you know, doctors need to research anything, they can come and find stories like this and maybe draw some parallels with people they're treating.
Honestly, that's what I'm hoping to kind of use my story for in a way, like on top of promoting organ donation and Wilson's disease awareness. I really want to tell people, like, as a young person, you know, I'm 24 and it took me this long and I knew something was wrong. I was telling my doctors for years and it took this long for something to kind of take a turn. So I'm grateful to be able to share.
Yeah. So then that what happened to the point where you needed a transplant then?
Yeah. So there's a window in between there, right? So I overprescribed the medication. And like I said, since that time, I couldn't take it. I couldn't take any. After about 2 years of me not taking anything, my levels were really high. And so I was like, I started in college and I was moving, like I moved out by myself and everything. And I still felt sick all the time. And the doctors were saying, you need to get back on medication. And I didn't want to. I was like so traumatized from being so sick. And so I ended up back in the emergency room and my levels were like, my ALT and AST levels were like so astronomically high and I ended up having to get back on the medication. I was forced to, but I couldn't, like my body would not tolerate it. I would throw it up almost every time I took it. I still would force myself to take it, but I would almost always throw it up. And the doctors knew this. Like I would tell them, you know, I don't know. And so they tried the other medications, the penicillamine, the cyprine, and those two, my body wouldn't accept them. And so, you know, it kind of was just like that for a few years where I would just take it when I could and hope for the best. And I felt awful every year. I was getting worse and worse. My levels were always off, but they never were, I guess, concerning enough to, you know, do anything. And so I think when I was like, and throughout college, I would have to take time off. I would have to drop out of school, go see doctors, go get treatment for my symptoms, and it never really helped. And so it finally reached a point for, I guess, the last, I would say, like, the 2 or 3 years, my life, my quality of life was just non-existent. Like, I was so sick. I couldn't work anymore. I mean, I finished school, but I couldn't work. I was always in pain. I was always sick. And I don't know if I mentioned, but I want to go to medical school. I want to be a doctor. I studied biochem in college. And so when I was working, I was like doing very physical jobs. I'd work in the hospital. I did autopsies for a while. And so it was a very manually hard job, you know, standing on my feet all day, cutting open bodies. It's a lot. And so I couldn't do that. I couldn't work. I couldn't do what I wanted. I wanted to go to medical school. I was supposed to take the MCAT while I was in the hospital. And so I kind of reached a point where I didn't see doctors anymore, even the doctors, my liver doctors, because I was like, they're not helping me, you know, they're not doing anything. I need to figure this out on my own. And so I kind of took my health into my own hands and I studied holistic medicine. I studied like herbalistic medicine. I learned about how all of these different things can treat the body. And I knew, I mean, like I said, I want to be a doctor. So I knew that I needed modern medicine. Obviously, modern medicine is amazing. But I kind of was like, how can I treat the symptoms without taking all of these pills and doing all of these tests that aren't doing anything? I'm just wasting my money. And so I did that for a few years. I tried a bunch of different herbs. I learned like a certain diet for me to follow. And honestly, it was the most effective thing that I did. That was the best I felt when I was doing all of that stuff. But my Wilson's disease still wasn't being treated. And so I... last year, I kind of just reached a point, I was really malnourished. I was like 100 pounds, I couldn't eat anymore. And I lost the ability to walk and to move. And that's when I decided, okay, I need to see doctors, I need to do something. And so I found out about the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, which they're supposed to be one of the best hospitals in the country. And so I drove there from New Mexico. And really? It's a 6-hour drive. I went to the doctors here and they told me nothing's wrong with you. I went and saw several doctors in New Mexico, and they told me nothing is wrong with you. We don't know why you're here. You're fine. Your liver's, you just have a liver disease, but you're fine. And I was like, I can't walk. I can't move. I can't eat, you know, all of this stuff. And they were like, you're fine. You're fine. And so I drove to the Mayo Clinic 6 hours away, and they admitted me, and they were like, yeah, your liver's failing. Something isn't right. And so they started to do all of these tests, and I had never seen these doctors before. They didn't have any of my medical records. All I told them was I have Wilson's disease. I can't walk. I can't eat. And they ran all these tests and they were like, yeah, like you can't take your medication. And so your liver disease is, you know, your liver's failing. And so you need a transplant. And so I got a transplant a month later. I was in the hospital for a month.
But was that the first time you'd even thought about a transplant? Had that been mentioned before? Because if these doctors are just saying, oh, you're fine, they probably wouldn't have said to you, well, at some point you might need a transplant or anything.
They told me that I would never need a transplant. Yeah. My whole life, I was diagnosed when I was 5. My whole entire life, I was told you will never need a transplant. Your disease can be managed your whole life. You can live a perfectly healthy, normal life. And even when I went and saw the experts, and I participated in research studies, you know, I'm in these papers that you read about, and they would say, you're fine, your liver's healthy, you're like, and I felt so sick, and I was like, you know, if this is healthy, so no, to answer your question, I never would have suspected liver transplant. And when I went into the hospital, when I went to the Mayo Clinic, I didn't go thinking, my liver's failing, I need a liver transplant. I went thinking, oh, I can't walk, I can't move, it must be something else.
Yeah.
And I also just thought something was wrong with my stomach. I just thought I had like gastroparesis or a really bad form of IBS, because I really just couldn't eat. Like everything was dietary, all of my symptoms. So no, I had no idea.
So that's a huge shock straight away there. And then they run you through the process of having it all, and how was that? How did you feel?
So when I first found out that I was gonna need a transplant, it was shocking. I just freaked out. I mean, I was in the hospital room and I was supposed to take the MCAT like that week. And so I was like, no way, like, no, like I'm fine. Like I felt sick, but I always felt sick. So it was like, no way I'm going to need a transplant. I guess I just didn't believe them. Like I was like, they're going to do other things and it'll be fine. And my family was saying like, no, like you're going to do this. I'm like, no, like I was in denial, I think, for a while. And then the hardest part, obviously, anybody will say, is the waiting. And I didn't even wait that long. Like I was listed A1 status. I was number one. And they were saying, your liver is going to come any second. Like you're going to get it. especially I was in the hospital, like, you're gonna get it, you're gonna get it. But I didn't, I was like, no, like, I don't think I comprehended how sick I was or how bad my liver was, because I would tell the doctors, like, I don't want to be here. Can I just leave? Can I wait from home? Like, I feel okay. Like, they were like, and I was jaundiced. I had ascites. Like, I was not well. And they were like, no, you cannot leave. Like, you are very sick. And I was, but I was so used to feeling sick that it was like, and then I think as the weeks passed and I was like in the hospital, I kind of, you know, I was like, I need this. Like, something is wrong. Like, I need something to fix this, or else, you know, I kind of just thought I was gonna die. Like, and I was not, like, to say relieved, but it was kind of just like, okay, I won't suffer anymore type of thing. And so when I think I grew to get more excited about it, like, when the transplant came and the news finally came, it was like the best thing to ever happen to me. It was like, I'm finally gonna feel healthy. I'm finally gonna get better. But the whole process itself, while I was waiting, like, the evaluation process, I don't even remember. Like, my mom and my family kind of handled it all for me because it was expedited. And I just remember, like, yeah, I just remember being in the hospital room and kind of just tapping out, like, checking out. I was kind of just like, all right, I'll just wait for the liver to come.
Yeah. I mean, you're just in full survival mode then, and that's it. That's all you've got to do is wait, sit and wait. So, I mean, in that time that you were waiting, you must have been thinking about what life is like after a transplant, because I know I didn't have a clue what life was like for anyone. So what was running through your head? Was you like, what was your expectations?
Yeah, so I honestly didn't know. My aunt, when she received her transplant, she did not have a good experience, I guess. Yeah. I mean, she's a lot healthier now, but she had a really hard recovery. She had to go back in a few times. She had her transplant in Denver, Colorado, which is also 6 hours from New Mexico. And they did a great job, but she just had so many complications, and her liver failure was a lot different than mine. I mean, all of her organs kind of started to fail, and so she just had a really hard recovery. And that's all I knew. That's all my idea of transplant was, like, hearing her stories about how hard it was. And so I just didn't know. But to be completely honest, like, I didn't even really think about it too hard. I kind of was just like, I just need to get there. I was so anxious and eager waiting just to get it that I didn't even think about what was going to come after. It was just kind of like, let's just see. Like, I was so desperate, to be honest.
Through living for so long with all your complications with medications and just the constant illness and feeling sick, and just, you get to a point where it's like, look, I've got to do something, and, you know, this is what they say, it's got to be done, and that's it, and then we'll deal with the consequences after.
Exactly. That's exactly how I felt. It was like, I felt like I had waited my literal whole life for this, and it was kind of like, I had no idea what to expect. And even now, after my transplant, this is not what I expected at all, in the best way. And everything's been amazing. It's been a knock on wood. Everything's gone great. So it was definitely like a roller coaster, though, while I was in the process of it.
So then you had your operation, and how was your recovery? So just to clarify, you are now 11 months post transplant.
Yes. So 10 months, 11 months will be on the 17th, but everything went great. You know, I remember the surgeon came and talked to me before, and he was like, are you scared? Are you nervous? I'm like, no, I'm ready. Like, let's do it. Open me up, put me on the table. And I woke up in the ICU, and I felt like, I can't even describe how good I felt. Like, it's like I never felt good in my life. And that was the first time I ever felt healthy, felt okay. And I mean, I just undergone surgery. Everybody was like, so everyone was really concerned. I was like, I feel amazing. And so I was only in the ICU for, I think, less than a day. And I didn't even sleep. It was like the middle of the night. And the nurses kept saying, like, are you sure you're not tired? Like, they kept giving me more pain meds. They're like, you need to rest. And I'm like, I'm not tired. I feel great. And so I got to leave the ICU a little, like, I only was there for less than a day. And then I was only hospitalized for 3 days after that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was released really fast. They said it was the fastest turnaround they'd seen in
Yeah,
that
probably one of the
time.
fastest that I've ever heard from someone,
Yeah,
really. You're like a machine.
it was crazy. It was like literally everything my body was lacking, it got from the liver, the new liver.
Yeah.
And even after my transplant, I know I was in the hospital room and they were like, "You need to stay a few days." And I'm like, "Why? Like, I want to go. I'm ready to go home." And the next day after I left the hospital, you know, all I wanted to do was go to Target and like walk around Target because I hadn't been out in public for
Yeah.
so long. And it was just like, I don't know, like obviously I had to use like one of those motorized like chairs and I had to be
Yeah.
really careful, but I was out and
You want
every
to see
like
out,
I haven't even like since that time, there hasn't been a day where I haven't, you know, felt amazing or gone out and done something. Like even if, you know, I don't have a reason to, it's like, well, why not? Like I am able to, and I'm like, I feel good enough to. It hasn't been perfect. I had a, like I caught a virus and I had a pretty bad flu and a pretty bad cold and I did have rejection for a short period of time, but even with that, like all of that stuff, I mean, obviously I felt not well, but compared to how I felt before, it was nothing. It's like,
Yeah.
you know, like I feel sick, but this is nothing compared to how sick I was. And the pain that I feel is nothing compared to the pain I was feeling. So,
Yeah.
yeah, my recovery has been great.
That's so good to hear. So good to hear. Like I said, you look amazing for 11 months. And what kind of scar did you get?
Oh, I'll show you. Do you want me to show you?
Yeah.
I got the Mercedes scar.
Yeah, because that's what I was expecting. It's healed really, really well.
I'm really grateful. When I was getting the staples, like the staples were in there for a while and I was
Yeah.
like eager to get them out. I was like, every appointment I'd be like, please, please. And the doctors were like, we're gonna leave them in a little longer. And I was so bugged, but now I'm so grateful because I'm like, it healed so nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been like kind of gentle with it. I think I told you I use like vitamin E cream on it. But that was about it. But your scar looks so, you don't even look like you have a scar.
My surgeon just did an amazing job, and I drank so much water when I came out of hospital. That's all I just remember, just drinking loads and loads of water, and I don't know whether that helped at all.
Probably, and probably
Yeah.
good for your kidneys.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as we know, life after transplant is sort of can be troughs and peaks, but what have you got planned for the future?
So the first few months were the hardest because I'm so used to always doing something. I told you I studied biochem in college. I even when I was in high school, I was taking college courses and I always was doing extracurricular things because I knew I was going into this career that was going to be crazy. And so I kind of felt like the grandparents in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I was always in bed. I was never
Yeah.
really doing anything. And so it was kind of nice though to take that time. And now I'm really focusing on just kind of like getting healthy. Like I want to stay healthy. So I started going to the gym for the first time ever in my life this year.
Yeah.
And so I do that real I do that almost every day. I love it. It feels just so good to be able to like have the strength and like to
Yeah.
feel good doing it, because before it was not the case.
Yeah.
And so that's my biggest concern. I'm like trying to find like learn the best way to like live, I guess, like the best way to diet, the best healthiest lifestyle. And then the plan is still medical school. I really, really, really want to work in transplant. I kind of always was unsure of what field I wanted to go into. I, to be completely honest, did not want to work in liver disease because I was just so traumatized, I think.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, I could do transplant, especially I think with like children, just because I was a sick kid and I know what it's like to have bad doctors.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
that's the future goal. But for right now, I'm trying to work with my local donor services and my local Donate Life Foundation. April is Donate Life Month in the United States. I think it's Donate Life Month in the world. I
Yeah.
could but I had a lot with them this month and they asked me to speak in a bunch of different events and I became really good friends with them. And so they have been kind of like, you know, we've been kind of talking, and I think I'm going to be able to work with them in their department. I told you before this, I did autopsies.
Yeah.
And so they offered for me to kind of work as a tissue coordinator. And so I would actually work with like some of the parts, which would be really incredible, I think, to see that whole full circle process. When I was working at the morgue doing autopsies, we worked with donor services and we saw donor autopsies done. And I was always amazed, but to now, I guess, be on the other side of that is just like, wow, yeah, I want to do that. So
tell, because I've never spoke to anyone that one that does autopsies, and then when you put that spin on it of, like you say, seeing the organs going off to be used elsewhere, like, what's the process for that?
Yeah, it's really cool. So I am like, obviously it was a very hard job, but it was very rewarding because, you know, you do get to see kind of like the whole process of it. So, I guess procurement of the organs, where they take the organs out, to use, it doesn't happen at the morgue. It happens before the bodies come to the morgue.
Yeah.
And so when the bodies come in, everything is taken out.
Yeah.
And it's really crazy because they take everything. They take your bones, they take your eyes, they take some of your skin. And so these bodies come in and they're like, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of scary just because everything is like, looks so different, but it's amazing because it's like, wow, yeah, they really don't leave like any pieces behind. Like anything they can use, they're going to use. And you can kind of follow along and see like, okay, this person saved, you know, 3 lives.
Yeah.
The tissues went to 8 different people. Like you can see the whole process of it. But it's really, I think it's really amazing. I mean, obviously if you're squeamish or it's like not for the faint of heart, but to, I guess, know that, you know, all of these organs are being used for future lives, it's just so incredible to me.
Yeah. How was your first autopsy?
Let me think. I remember it, but it was like I don't know how much I could talk about it. The case itself was really not, it was like kind of a sad case, but the autopsy itself, like, I mean, obviously you have to like disassociate yourself a little bit from the cases, but the actual work, like the autopsy itself, was really interesting for me because I mean, I'd taken anatomy classes, I'd read it in a textbook, I'd seen it, like I'd shadowed other people who had done the autopsies, but to do it yourself and to actually like cut out, you know, the organs and everything, it's just like, it's so surreal. It's like, like this is inside of me, like, you know, I'm cutting out this person's heart, but like I have a heart right here. And especially towards the end of when I was working there, we'd get liver failure cases. It's unfortunately very common here in New Mexico that people die of like alcohol related deaths, or liver failure. And so I'd see a lot of those, and it was kind of like, that was very surreal because I wasn't doing well and I knew I was sick and I knew it was my liver. And so it was kind of like, man, is this what my liver looks like? Is this, you know, is this how I'm going to be? It was very, I guess, like, it made it really hard for me to do my job because it was like, I would imagine myself a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you see a picture of your liver?
I did. Yeah, I did. And it was not good.
No.
It was very cirrhotic, very bumpy. And after I spoke to the surgeon and he said, you know, you didn't really show how sick you were. Like you only had like a few more days at best.
You didn't show,
he's like, you're just so happy and you're so bubbly. And you never acted like you weren't this sick. So yeah, I want to see one of my new liver because I was told that they took a picture of my new liver inside of me. And some people in support group from my hospital have seen their livers. I'm like, I want to see mine.
Yeah, I didn't think about asking for a picture of my new liver, just the old one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My surgeon said he knew that I was interested in like anatomy. And so he's like, I took a picture of your liver while you're opened up, it's inside me. Oh, that's so cool, I want to see it. But I haven't seen it.
And then, so the job that you're leading into, you said this, I didn't fully understand what it was, so it was dealing with tissues and organs, And around the organ transplant or tissue transplant sort of area.
It's called, I think the position is a tissue coordinator, a tissue tissue recovery coordinator. And so I believe we'd get the bodies in and we'd kind of be responsible for, I guess, collecting the tissues that we needed. I don't know. I don't think it would be procuring the organs, but I think the tissues from what I know. But even if it's like, they sent me a few positions that I could qualify for, but what I would most want to do is work with the families. There's something called a family recovery coordinator that works in the hospital, and they speak to the donor families and they kind of tell them the process of it and you know how it all works. And I guess as a person whose life has been so drastically improved from transplant, it'd be so amazing to tell them, you know, like it's, you know, obviously this is terrible, but your family members' organs are going to save lives in a way, obviously a much better way of saying that, but that's what I would like to do. So I'm hoping I could do something like that. But also the tissue recovery coordinator would be cool. I already have experience with that.
I think any of those jobs you'd be awesome at because you've had that experience. So whether it's dealing with children, talking to families, or, you know, recovering tissue.
Thank you.
I hope so. Yeah. So, you know, it's been tough, but now you're out the other side and you're feeling really good. And so what would you say to someone else that's maybe just about to go into their transplant?
I think I would say, most importantly, everybody's recovery is completely different. Like, I had an amazing recovery. Yeah. My experience has been great, but I know, like, you know, everybody else's story I've ever heard has been completely different. So I think that it's important to not compare your recovery to someone else's. And also, I have bad days. You know, there are days I don't feel well. Like I said, it's just for me a perspective thing because I went from not feeling well to always, you know. But I think to just have, like, patience with your recovery. Don't push yourself too hard. There's been times where, you know, I lift a little too heavy or I just push myself too hard, and it can really set you back in your recovery if you're not careful. So I think just that. And also, oh my gosh, join a support group or find a good support group. Danny, I met you on Instagram. I think you can meet so many people even outside of Wilson's disease. It's even better if it's not Wilson's disease, because Wilson's disease is so rare, but there's groups for absolutely everything, and it's been so helpful. I am by far the youngest person in all of my groups that I go to by like 20 years, but I love them, and I've made so many amazing friends through them. And every time I'm having like a panic, like I'm like, I don't feel well, you know, my side hurts, like I'll text someone and be like, have you ever had this happen to you? And it's always like answered, and I've always felt better. So
I remember that fresh out of transplant, anything that was like twingy or anything, like you're like, oh, am I gonna die?
Every day, I'm like, every single day I'm like, is it just like a random pain or is my liver failing again?
I do use Facebook, and I'm on a few groups of Facebook, but Instagram's what I mainly use, and the people that I've built up on my Facebook, that it's just like a huge family. You know, the transplant community is, everyone's so, so supportive. Like you say, I mean, most of them are so happy for you to reach out if you've got any questions, and lots of people share their stories. So if you don't have a question, but you're following them, they might say something that you can then relate to and you know, feel a bit less worried or whatever.
Yeah, it's been so, so helpful. Especially Instagram is where I've met the most Wilson's disease patients, especially like younger ones. I think that's what's been most helpful for me, is like meeting younger people, because like I said, all these groups I go to, it's always like a lot of, which is perfectly fine, it's just not a big demographic I think of younger people going to the support groups. But it's been super helpful. I go to my hospitals, like they have a weekly support group, and I think that that's just special because we all have the same doctors, the same surgeons, see the same teams, and so we can refer to our doctors by name, and it's like, oh, well, this doctor said this and you should ask him next time you see him. So Yeah.
Yeah, that's so nice. So nice that you can form those connections with people. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been really, really interesting.
Thank you so much for interviewing me. I appreciate you listening to my story.
like I say, I'm more than happy to listen to people's stories. I find it so interesting, and it's so nice when there's, you know, the positive when you've got this finished story of, you know, out the other side of transplant or the medication's doing well and people are just living their best lives. It's so nice to see.
Thank you. I'm really happy. I'm just happy to be here, as I always say.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Even small things like you, I think we were talking before, you know, just going out for a walk, just having that chance just to be able to go out is a blessing. And not everyone that's, people that maybe haven't been through sort of medical issues and stuff may not relate, or, but, you know, it's all the small things that make the big difference.
It's so true, yeah. Like things you don't even, you know, I go to the store sometimes and I'll just go down the aisles and just pick snacks that I've always wanted to try, but I never could eat. And I'm just like, well, I'll just try like Pop-Tarts or, you know, like junk food. I'm like, oh, like, well, I'll just try it. It's just, yeah, things you don't really think about, but make a difference.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Victoria. And yeah, have a great rest of the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny.
Bye-bye.
Bye.